Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This point, he's pulling a sword out of his pant leg, like it was down his pant leg. So he's pulling it up, and then he brings it like this, and this is katana style. That's when I'm like, I took two steps back. I'm not going to be that cop that runs around his car running from a bad guy. It's just, at this point, he has made the decision of what's going to happen right now. Unfortunately.
Hey guys, look at you coming back for part three this week. Now, you know, I don't do this very often, but that's how important our guest is, that the experiences he's went through. I couldn't just stop it yesterday because a lot of this is pertinent to anybody that's considering a career in law enforcement. And this is all about having you prepared so you'd go in with your eyes open. This is not television. It's not anything like you see on TV. Don't believe that crap. That's not what law enforcement is. That's Hollywood. And remember, they make it exciting because they're trying to make money off either the movie or the TV show. I'm not criticizing them for that. I mean, I was involved in a show called Narcos, and I love it because it keeps my wife, Connie, and I from eating cat food in retirement. But seriously, this is important enough to do in episode three. So that's why we're here. Our guest this week is Chad Jensen. Chad, thank you so much for coming back for part three, brother. It's I'm very honored.
Yeah. Excellent to be here, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. So, folks, if you remember, we got through his, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this without cursing on the show, but through his little incident involving the FBI with a couple of overzealous agents that really didn't know what they were doing, but it kind of carries over not just them, but the prosecutors as well, and including the judge that was sitting on this case. If you haven't heard those parts, go back and listen to it because it's worthy of listening to. He's got a book out, Badge Under Fire. My screen just timed out over here, but if you're watching this on YouTube, you're seeing a placard on the screen right now. Highly encourage everyone to read this book, especially if you're considering a career in law enforcement. This is reality. We got to the end of the prosecution. He's been vindicated. They've been found not guilty. He went back to work. The agency, his chief, has screwed over him again. And so, Chad, what we didn't get into was after that, you finally did get back out on patrol because the city manager checked in. But then what happened in March of 2020 when you were out on patrol?
Okay. Yeah, it was a first of all, that return to patrol. It's kind of hard to put into words that feeling of finally, after 3 years or almost really 4 years of this, being able to get back in a black and white and get back on patrol, because that's your lifeblood. That's what I signed up for the job for, is to be a patrol cop. That's what I wanted. And just getting back, I remember my first day, August 5th, 2019, I got back on the street. So I got back to work January 27th, and I didn't go 10-8 in service in a patrol car until August 5th. So that's, you think about that. I mean, that's like 7 months of absolute ridiculousness through my department until, like you say, the city manager, God bless her, stepped in and said, hey, enough of this, get this guy back to work. So get back to work. I'm now acting sergeant on day shift, and going through the holidays, we get to March. And in our city, we don't have a lot of resources. We're a city of about 175,000 people. We're 26 square miles. Like I said, Pomona is a very working class town. There's not a lot of industry there. There's not a lot of jobs there. So we have a very high crime rate. We have a prostitution problem, gang problem, all these different stuff. So you work in Pomona. It's not Mayberry. You're working here. And that's why I went there. That's why I work there. I love working. It makes the day go quicker, and it's just what you signed up for. So I finally get back to work in March. I'm the acting sergeant on a day watch. We're just kind of going through things. All of a sudden, actually a little quick backup right here. As the acting sergeant, or as a sergeant on the squad, you're not responding to calls. You're not taking calls for service. You're not taking reports. Your job is to supervise, right? And I'm available should a code 3 response be needed for a certain call in progress or something. But I wouldn't respond to paper calls or silly calls, but I can go and back officers. So I'm kind of backed in at, 3rd and Rebecca, kind of a little industrial area there, just monitoring calls. And I'm working on my catechism stuff because I'm taking Catholic classes, right? Because there's a whole nother portion of Badge Under Fire where I talk about what do I believe that the Lord wanted me to go through this for? And we'll get to that. But that was a very important piece of this whole thing. So I'm working on these classes. We're busy that morning. So there's no units 10-8 or available. Everybody's on calls. They put out a call of a man with a sword. Pomona units, man with a sword, Monterey and San Antonio or something like that. Victim was hit in the head with a sword, medical aid en route. Well, okay, I'm listening. Nobody's speaking up. Nobody's chirping up on the radio. Everybody's on calls. Nobody's clearing. So I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to go. And mind you, Chad's just now back from all of this federal crap I went through. Not to mention the city stuff and the department stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Having a scarlet letter when you come back and the chief just not having your back. And so there's a certain portion of your brain back here that goes, hey, do you want to go through more stuff like this? What are you doing? Why are you going into the fire? You just got out, right? So, well, you don't have that choice, right? So, all right, Sam 3, I'm in route. And then we start rolling. And get there. And as I'm approaching the area, they put out that he's at a new location. So, of course, I roll up. And this is all on body cam, by the way. And that's the beauty of this portion of it, is that this was all on body cam, to where when I was involved in that fair incident, there was no body cams. Our department and our city drugged their feet. Oh, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. But magically, after I went through what I went through with the feds, all of a sudden we got body cams. So I am a huge proponent of body cams, right? And I love them. They have exonerated me way more times than they've ever got me into trouble. So responding to the scene, locate the victim standing on the curb line. He's got blood coming down out of the back of his head onto his shirt. I roll up and I was like, well, obviously this is my victim. I kind of make contact with him. Hey, where's the bad guy? Where's he at? Oh, he's down there. He ran that way. Okay, like down there. Okay, like towards the reservoir. Yeah. And just as I'm looking down, you see this little figure go dee 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 right across the street, all dressed in what appeared to be all black. And he's like, yeah, that's him right there. Oh, that's him. So as I take off, notify dispatch, hey, I got your guy. He's going to be running southbound reservoir, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking all these things are going through your head again. What are you doing? Why are you trying to get involved in stuff, dude? Right? Just go be a typical sergeant and go park under a tree and wait for reports. That's generally what sergeants do, right? Why are you doing this? Why are you actively trying to pursue this guy? So I say, well, I'm not trying to catch him, right? Because when you have two options when somebody runs from you. You can contain him, right? Try and just contain him, go down to the next block and make sure that he doesn't get any further southbound than this. So you quasi set up a perimeter, right? Or you can do what you did in your younger years, is flip that door open and run, try and chase and catch him. At this point, I'm 50 years old, so I'm not going to run and chase you. I'm not going to do it, right? So I'm going to just, all I want to do is I just want to kind of corral him in. And as I arrive at the intersection of where he's at, there at Reservoir, it's one of those commercial gas pump places that is just for like FedEx trucks. There's no like anything there. It's just fuel pumps on an island, right, with concrete around. And there's no personnel there. So as I pull in, I see him attempting to jump a 6-foot cinder block wall. So he's posting up like this, and I can plainly see it's him. So I'm kind of scooting around the corner, and then I'm just going to set up on the corner to make sure to check westbound and northbound so he doesn't cross me to go southbound. Just trying to corral him because now units are coming, right? Mm-hmm. So as I do that, as I pull around the corner, I see him running now. He couldn't get over the wall. So there's a little set of hedges along this wall headed southbound on the east side that he was traversing. He was going through there and I could see that. So I pull my unit in. Again, lights are on, full uniform, marked police car. He knows who I am, right? No problem of identification. So I pull in like this. I throw the door open. He jumps inside of the bushes and starts running along the wall inside of the bushes. So I'm just kind of standing out waiting for him to come out on the south side of the, south side of the bushes. And he jumps out directly in front of me, like freaking Tony the Tiger. Comes straight out of the bushes, walking like a freaking zombie. And so I have a gunpoint already, giving him commands. Hey, let me see your hands. Let me hear it. Stop, stop, stop. He keeps walking. He keeps walking. So at this point, he's pulling a sword out of his pant leg, like it was down his pant leg, the inside of his pant leg. So he's pulling it up, and then he brings it like this, and this as he's in this like katana style, you know what I mean? That's when I'm like, I took 2 steps back, and that was, I'm not going any further than that. I'm not going to be that cop that runs around his car running from a bad guy. It's just, at this point, he has made the decision of what's going to happen right now. I've done every command I can give him as clear as I can be. I speak in a language that's very, very clear. When you see the video, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So unfortunately, you know, officer-involved shooting occurs, and he ends up falling to the ground. And any loss of life is tragic. That's somebody's son, that's somebody's brother, cousin, whatever. No cop enjoys or takes pleasure out of taking a life. That's not what humans are meant to do. And it's not in your DNA. So anyway, he ends up dropping right there on the ground. There was obvious injuries that were fatal to him. So partner officer arrives. Again, that feeling of the cavalry showing up really just gives you that these goosebumps that you get right now.
There's nothing like it.
No, absolutely nothing like it. Because you're scared. You can hear me in my video. My commands are very clear, very clear, very clear. And then at the point when the shooting's going to occur, it's like you can hear me like, oh, sh-, like mm-hmm. He's not stopping. And so anyway, we do our best to secure the scene. Supervisor shows up, ends up transporting me to the station. But the thing about the shooting that was particularly tough was when I arrived on scene and I contacted the victim, who ended up to be the suspect's brother. Okay. The backstory was that the suspect had ordered this 36 or 31 inch sword online on Amazon, right? Good old Amazon. You can buy anything on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
So he gets this sword on Amazon, and then he goes with his brother down to the post office to pick it up, right? So he picks it up at the post office, and then somewhere along the line, he gets like some gray tape and tapes up the handle. And as they're walking, and they're probably a half mile from home, the brother victim is in front of the suspect, and the suspect just takes this sword and just whacks him in the back of the head. And you see it, he's got a big, it's like 6-inch laceration on the back of his head. And for no reason, completely unprovoked. And that was his brother that did that to him. So when I ultimately made contact with the suspect, he was like 2 houses away from home. He had almost made it to his residence. So if you watch the video that's on YouTube, you'll see there's a car that pulls up as I'm talking to the victim. There's a like a gold minivan that shows up on the north curb line, and the driver gets out. She calls me by name. Hey, Chad, right? And I didn't recognize immediately who it was, but I know now who it was. She worked at a burger place in Pomona that we frequented. Like, it was officer friendly, if you know what I mean. Like, it was a safe place to eat, because as cops, especially in Los Angeles County, most of the time you take your food. You don't eat out. So when you find a restaurant that's post approved, if you will, right. That you trust the location, they're officer friendly, you don't feel like you're getting fed pubic hairs and stuff like that. So she worked a drive through there. And for probably the past 5 years, I had been in there probably once a week, either having breakfast or lunch or something like that, or meeting somebody there. She would say, "Hey, Chad, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Hey, I'm having problems with my son." And I'm like, "Well, how old's your son? Like 13? She goes, "No, he's like 28 or something like this, right? And he's just disrespectful and he's just, oh, he just caused me so many problems." And I'm like, "Well, you got to do something. You got to get him out of the house because you live your life, blah, blah, blah." I'm giving her I'm not kidding you, it's probably 3 to 5 years. I'm talking to her almost weekly, maybe monthly, about her son, trying to give her the best advice I can, right? Turns out that is my suspect. Her son is my suspect.
Oh my God.
So when she rolls up, she had gotten a phone call from her victim's son that said, "Hey, Anthony just hit me in the head trying to chop my head off." So she was on her way to come get the victim when she saw me. And of course, in critical incidents, you don't have time to, all right, everybody stop and pause. That doesn't get to happen. You have a suspect who's actively running with the weapon he just used to try and kill somebody with. You have to stop the threat. You have to get to him. So anyway, that was a tragic portion of that, and was very unfortunate, but the decision wasn't mine to make that day. And I gave him every opportunity to give up and do the right thing, even just run away. So
absolutely.
Yeah, that whole debacle was March of 2020. Again, this is the BLM time. This is defund the police, right? This whole narrative, riots are going on in LA, some going on in Pomona. Not big ones like LA, but little mini riots that occur in the center of the city. But of course, immediate backlash from the public. All of a sudden, the public, again, who has no idea what occurred. There was no witnesses. There was literally no witnesses to this except my body cam. And ladies and gentlemen, cops out there, wear your body camera.
Absolutely.
That body camera saved me, saved my life. Because think about this. Think about who wants to get a hold of me by the neck. The DOJ, the FBI. What better segue to get a hold of me than an officer kills a guy with a sword and there's no witnesses? There's no body camera. Oh, he's hiding something for sure. We got him this time, right? So that was the only saving grace that I had, is that this was in 4K. Ultra high definition. It's very clear. You can see exactly audio and video, everything that happens. So rewind back to the night of the shooting. And this is at dusk. This occurs right at dusk. So I get picked up. I get taken to the station. And this is the part of a Hollywood police drama series stuff. I wish that Hollywood would just try and get it right one time. Just one time. Make a show that's pretty realistic. Like I remember watching, what was that movie? With Michael Pena in it and Jake Gyllenhaal, End of Watch. That was pretty good. Right up until the end. And then it was too Hollywood. But the part that really sucks, and the punishment is the process, right? IA portion of this is the punishment. So you get transported to the station, you get talked to anybody, you're set, anybody that's involved is completely separated, you're all in different rooms, you have a babysitter, usually somebody that sits with you, and you're not allowed to talk to anybody. And it's not until this shooting occurred at like 5:30, I didn't get contact with the LASO shoot team until close to 11 o'clock at night. So wow. You're sitting there 6, 7, 8 hours, and all you're doing it, and you don't have an opportunity to review cameras at that time or anything. You just are left to your own gray matter between your ears, which you're playing it back in your mind. And now, given what I just went through with the feds, where do you think my brain is? Dude, my brain is just circling the drain. And I'm like, did I see what I saw? I know I saw this. When you're involved in an officer-involved shooting during a critical incident like this, this was not like an administrative shooting, like you're a sniper and you're lined up on this guy and you're just waiting to take your shot. That's kind of administrative, right? This is in the moment, millisecond by millisecond. You don't go through a thought process. You don't go through a checklist. Like when you go to the range, you go, okay, all right, my sight picture, okay, right, don't squeeze it, don't push the round, don't pull the round, slight pressure, blah, blah, blah. You don't do any of that. You go to your training, and it's like from the second, the last thing that I remember with this was his sword like this. That photo, that snapshot is what I have. And then the next snapshot is him lying on the ground. There's no recollection of how many rounds I shot. There's no recollection of sight picture, sight alignment, breathing. Your ears are not ringing. You go to the range and you forget your ear protection, you're going to get smoked. And we had 45 caliber handguns, so they were not little pea shooters. So when people say, oh, you could have shot it out of his hand, or you could have shot him in the leg, when your life is in immediate danger or that of another person, and you're making these decisions on the fly, it's so unfair that people come back and second guess you. And obviously there's case law, right, that says that you can't use 20/20 hindsight to judge an officer's actions.
Yeah, if a judge lets you enter that into evidence.
Right. Which, do you think I had that at my federal trial?
Oh, heck no.
No. No. So, but that's, again, that's why you need that expert witness to come in there and explain things like that to the jury. So anyway, 6-7 hours later, the LASO, the LA sheriffs are the ones that investigate officer-involved shootings because we're in Los Angeles County. We don't investigate our own. So they come in there, really cool guys, two detectives on the shoot team. They come in, it's probably 10, 11 o'clock at night. I had made contact with my attorney who happened to be out of town at that time. So I got another attorney, Ken, I can't remember Ken's last name right now. Ken Uweller also had defended me on some prior cases. Another excellent guy. He's like, hey, Chad, sounds like this video is good to go. Again, you're not making any comments tonight. You have to, the only thing you're required to tell them is how many rounds you fired and the direction that you fired. And that's all I want you to say. Okay, don't say anything else. And because you, we talked about this yesterday, you as an officer, you have rights too.
Right.
So you don't surrender your rights when you step into the police car. So the shoot team shows up. Obviously, they take your gun, they take your mags, your body cam's already been taken by the department. They come in, they sit down, they talk to me, and they're like, hey, we haven't looked at the video yet. But we understand there's a complete video of this from beginning to end. Do you want to watch it? Ooh. Oh, man, this is, oh, it gets you emotional because this is a point that your life's going to take a dramatic turn right now. If you're wrong and it wasn't a sword or it looks bad, you're going to get hung by your bootstraps on the first flagpole they can find.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, well, I know what I know. I know I saw what I saw and experienced what I experienced. So he's like, all right, put it up. They fired up the video and your heart's racing 185 miles an hour. And they play the video and it's exactly like I remember. Everything is perfect on this and it's all good to go. And I just felt a gigantic sigh of relief on that half of it, which is the common sense portion. But California, Los Angeles County, 2020, you're not dealing with common sense is nowhere in the equation, right? So that night, I get issued another firearm from the department and go home. Ultimately, midnight-ish, I get home. And then next morning, here comes the internet. So, but I got through that portion of it. I ended up going to see because after every officer-involved shooting, they don't require it, but they recommend that you go talk to a therapist, right? A psych, whatever you want to do. By the grace of God, I got assigned a therapist and I lived up in the high desert of Southern California, like up in the Hesperia, Victorville area. And he happened to have an office up there. I went and met this guy, and I'm walking in and I'm like, I don't buy into this therapy thing. Okay. This is the job we signed up for. I feel good about my shoot. I didn't have any heartburn about it. He made the decision, but I'm going to just go and talk to this guy anyway. Right. So I go there, I meet him. He used to work for Montclair PD. I cannot remember his name right now, but this dude was awesome. I've been to other psychs where how long do I have to sit here with you? Cause you're freaking pissing me off and you're driving me crazy right now with the, how are you doing? That's not what I want to hear. So we debrief the whole thing. We talk about it. I had some heartburn, not sleeping well. I couldn't get to sleep. That was the only thing that was really truly bugging me. So we talked about that at length. And the more we talked, the more it went back to your problems, Chad, are not the shooting. The shooting, I think your soul is at peace with that, right? I really truly feel that way. What your soul is troubled about is the way you're treated when you came back to work, because you spent 20 years with these guys that you work with, right? And when your expectations are here, but your reality is here, that's where stress comes in, because these two things are supposed to marry up, right? Your expectations and reality are supposed to marry up. And when they don't, that's when you get stress. Okay. So we talked about that at length, and then just were able to really dissect how when you find somebody that's kind of gone through something similar to what you've gone through, you have this brother or sister, right? That you immediately, you let your guard down and you guys can talk on a level that you really talk to each other. And he had gone through some similar stuff at Montclair PD. That's ultimately why he retired and became a therapist. So it was just like the Lord put me with the right guy. So I was there. I went and probably saw him half a dozen times over 2.5 weeks. And then I get a call from the new chief of police. Hey, you need to come back to work. I said, sir, it's not even been 3 weeks. And in our history, when you get involved in officer-involved shooting of a critical incident like that, the time is yours. You come back when you're ready, because I don't want a cop on the street that's not ready, right? So anyways, he's like, if you don't come back Monday, you're going to start burning your own sick time.
Wow.
Okay. Well, thank you. What else to say, but thank you. So there I am. I go back. I go 10-8. This is late April, right? So I've been gone maybe a month now and 3 weeks. And I come back and this is the end of my career right here. Okay. Cause I went through all this crap, come back, get back to work, loving my job, get involved in the shooting, get a good therapist. Things are going, wheels are spinning now, looking good. And then, on May 5th of 2020, I get dispatched to a call. Again, I'm the supervisor on duty. I'm the sergeant on duty. And, they put out a call, a man with a machete at Interstate 10 and Fairplex off ramp, banging on his hood, trying to pull people out of cars with a machete, right? Crickets on the radio. Nobody speaking up. So SAM 3, I'll be en route.
What the heck? Why are the other units not responding?
That's a whole different Oprah right there, man. Okay, because okay. Cops these days, and not trying to bash, there's good cops out there that are presently employed as cops, yes. But the vast majority of the officers now are just looking for a paycheck, and they are ill prepared for this job. And God bless them, because they're working in a time where I wouldn't want to be a cop right now, especially in California. So call goes out, man with a machete. I'm rolling up there. The little dude dancing around the back of my head is doing backflips. Like, dude, what are you doing? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
So I roll up there. Thankfully, he's UTL. He's in the wind. He's gone. I have no victim to contact, no RP to contact. He had ran up the hill into the hillside, into the sheriff's department area. I meet up with the sheriff's guys, give them the best info I have. They do an area check, negative results. He's gone. Watch commander, hey, Chad, can you 1019 real quick and debrief? Because this is all on the radio and the city council is going to get wind of this stuff going on and they want to know, right?
Right.
So I go back to the station and meet the watch commander, tell him, hey, XYZ, this is what occurred. He's like, okay, man, hey, thanks. Good job out there. Stay safe. Hit the streets. Thanks, pal. I'm walking out of the watch commander's office and I bump into the new deputy chief, right? He bumps into me and he's like, hey, Chad, how's it going? I said, oh, it's going okay. What's up? Hey, I just wanted to kind of let you know, I don't know if you've heard, but you know your the machete guy call you were on there? Yeah, I just want to let you know that his family has retained the defense attorney from your federal trial. The guy that was testifying, the sleazebag attorney from LA, they've retained that attorney and they filed a lawsuit against the city. And obviously you're the named subject. So I go, okay, well, that obviously doesn't make me happy, but I get it. And
from the machete. Now this is from the machete call that you couldn't find.
This was from my samurai sword guy. Sword guy's family filed a lawsuit against me and the city, obviously. And so he's like, he tells me that. And I'm like, well, obviously it doesn't make me happy, but I get it. I understand. That's the current climate of law enforcement against law enforcement in California. Get it. So I then tell him, I said, the only thing that I'm going to expect is that it's going to be different this time because last time I kind of was left out on an island all by myself and nobody had my back. But now this incident is in 4K, ultra HD. It is crystal clear what happened. So I would expect that the chief or somebody from the city is going to be out on the front steps of the police station saying, hey, this officer deserves due process just like everybody else and release the body camera. So up until this machete call, our department had never released body camera. Our department was old school, circle the wagons. We're just going to power through. We're not going to give out any information. And that's the dumbest thing that a chief of police could ever say.
Absolutely.
We'll see where the investigation leads. No, information that you have, this verified information, release it. Get it out there. Get in front of it. So as I tell him, I would hope that somebody's going to go out on the front steps of the police department and say, hey, we're going to release this information. We have camera video of this. We'll release it. This officer deserves due process just like everybody else, XYZ. And his response, golden. And I can see his face right now. Chad, you know we can't do that. We can't do that.
This is Jenny Garth from 90210 OMG. HGTV is bringing back the 90s in a big way with Totally 90s House, a brand new renovation competition series that reunites some of your favorite television stars from the era for a showdown unlike anything you've seen before. Let's be honest, the 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. But the home design choices, well, that's a different story. Hosted by Jaleel White, this throwback competition sends two teams of your favorite 90s TV stars across America in search of homes frozen in time. Their mission? Find the two most dated houses they can and transform them into modern dream homes. Jodie Sweetin, Beverly Mitchell, Brian Austin Green team up against Matthew and Joey Lawrence, Melissa Joan Hart, and Keisha Knight Pulliam. Paired with HGTV mentors, they'll transform those outdated spaces into fresh, modern homes while keeping just the right amount of dope, nostalgic charm. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets, sponge-painted walls, and glass blocks. Hello, 21st century dream homes. Totally 90s House special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And I'm like, Are you kidding? Are you serious? I said, how in the hell do other sheriffs and chief of police do it, but we can't do that? How is that? John McMahon was a sheriff of San Bernardino Police, San Bernardino Sheriff's Department at the time. awesome individual, excellent leader. He's one that gets out there and says, hey, if my deputy screwed up, I will handle him. He'll get his discipline. But if he's innocent, he's innocent and he's going to go back to work. There was several times in the past that he had been out on the news saying just that. And the media doesn't dictate how we do business. And so anyway, the deputy chief says that to me, and it was just a life-changing moment right there. I immediately walk out the station and I get back into my patrol car and I'm just sitting there. And all of this is processing in my mind, like, your ass is going to be hanging out in the breeze and nobody's going to have your back. We're going to go all through this again. It's going to go right back to the feds. We're going to all of this is just processing through my brain. And I always thought that, God, what is it when you have like a mental breakdown, but not a complete one? You have like a
anxiety.
Yeah. Anxiety or a stress attack or something like that. I kind of was a little old school on that. And we had a thing in Pomona, what's called the Hispanic panic, right? Like, oh, madre, her gangster son just got shot and killed or whatever. And she's right. Just, oh, and she's laying on the ground. And that was our experience with anxiety attacks or whatever. So we're kind of jaded, right? And so here I am. My hands are just absolutely tingling. My throat is throbbing. My eyes, like my vision goes like this, just kind of goes to tunnel vision. And I'm like, man, I am not feeling good right now. And again, the Lord always taking care of me, man. My academy partner, Bill, happened to just be walking by the back of my patrol car. And he looks in and he sees my knucklehead sitting behind the wheel, right? So he comes up and he's just going to give me a hard time or something like that. Like you do, you rib each other, right? So he comes up, windows down, and he's like, hey, man, what's going on? And he could tell that something wasn't right. So we talked for probably a minute, and he's like, dude, you're 50 years old. You got to go to the hospital, okay? You can't just dismiss these things that are happening to your body in your body right now. Let's go to the hospital. So he drove me up to Pomona Valley Hospital up there, walk in. The staff, they're always very Team Blue. You walk straight to the back. They put you in a private area. And kudos to Pomona Valley. They were always treated us like that. A lot of other hospital institutions don't treat cops like that. So go back in there. She takes my blood pressure. It's like 164 over 115. It's just way up there. She's stripping all my stuff off me, telling me to relax, calm down. So me and Bill are sitting there. I finally get calmed down. And guess who walks in the room? Deputy Chief. Deputy Chief walks in.
See what you caused?
He's like, hey, Chad, I just wanted to make sure this wasn't because of anything I said. And I look over at Bill. Bill looks at me.
Oh my
God. And I said, sir, I'm all right. I'm all right. Like that. And then we just kind of sat there in silence because we were both just absolutely disgusted. And so he mills around uncomfortably for 2 or 3 minutes and then goes, oh, well, okay, I see you got Bill here, so I'll just go ahead and take off. Typical command-level personnel interaction. No, there's no connection here whatsoever. And that was my last day on the job. That was it. So I went home, and that day, my wife was like, yeah, we're done. We're done. We're done with your job. So you can go back to work, but you'll go back single because I'm not going to go through this anymore because you're thick-headed and you want to go out on your own terms, right? Right. But you can't do this anymore. You're going to die. So that was it. That was my last day. Put in my paperwork and I retired a year later in May of 21.
Understandable.
That was a crazy day. That was just, but.
I'm sure you've heard this too, Chad, where I've seen interviews with or read stories, read books where police officers say, I was in uniform for 30 years, never pulled my gun.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the world do they live that happens? I mean, even in a small town of West Virginia, we only had 35 officers. After 6 years, I had to have, we carried our own personal weapons back then. This is still wheel gun time. Mm-hmm. I had a Colt Python 4-inch.
That's cool.
And had to have the barrel re-blued from pulling out of the holster so much.
Wow. Yeah. Well, a lot of it is, if you're working in Mayberry, where you're going to trash can calls or barking dog calls all the time, and you're not contacting knucklehead gangsters and stuff like that, that was what's crazy too. I remember at this particular time, LAPD was going through some restructuring, and they're looking, because it's a defund police thing, and they're like, well, now we're going to make every time you break leather, that's going to be a use of force report. I'm like, dude, you are going to overwhelm internal affairs. Even pulling it out at the low ready, it's crazy. But
honestly, most of the time, that's what happens, is you just have it out just in case. If you're going into a building that's an alarm's gone off, but there's an opening go in there, if you don't have your weapon out, you're just asking to get yourself hurt.
Right. And like the great black hole of traffic stops. I mean, how many times have you had it behind your thigh? I'm not 4-7 down, not pointing it in your melon or anything like that, but it's just, I always had, and I got from my very first field training officer, Bob DeBee, right? A good dude. I talk to him to this day. Really made a huge impact in my life. He was the one that, two things. Number one, nobody ever gets the drop on you. Ever get the drop on you. You are judged by 12 or carried by 6. It's your choice. And I carry that every day on patrol everywhere I want. And to this day, I still feel that way. You know, you got to carry a gun everywhere you go. you can't not have a gun. So even in small town Texas where I live, and another quick story that's in Badge Under Fire. This was another, kind of pivotal saying that I don't know if, you know, in your life, you get a handful of nuggets. Like usually they come from your dad or your grandpa, like, right? It's just a day that changed my life was when Tom Steiner was a CHP officer that was murdered on the courthouse steps in Pomona. And I was 2 blocks away from that scene on a traffic stop. I'm working motors, and I'm actually working commercial vehicle enforcement on a motor. So I'm wearing a blue jumpsuit, which normally we just have a regular blue wools on, right? But I'm wearing a blue jumpsuit, and CHP wears their commercial investigators or enforcement officers, they wear blue jumpsuits as well, right? So Tom Steiner, in a nutshell, this is kind of what happened. He walks out of the courthouse because he's testifying for traffic infractions at the Pomona courthouse in that area. He's walking out to his unit. A car pulls up, and a young man, suspect, pulls a 38 revolver up over the window, drops 5 rounds at him, and he kind of ducks away like this, and the one round that killed him struck him right in the back of the head. Hmm. Boom, he drops to the ground. The bailiff in the courthouse hears the shots, so he comes running out, sees it, puts out a radio call. Our department puts out a radio call, officer down, and it's just, oof, man, those just give you chills when you hear that. And I remember just throwing the license at the guy, throwing my sight book in my bag, and hauling buttons over there. And when I saw him on the ground, lifeless and blood around his head and stuff like that, that is the moment that reality punches you in the face. Not in the gut, just punches you straight in the face. Because backstory, this idiot teenager wanted to make his bones with the gang, a local gang in town. So he figured if he drives around and he just kills a cop or shoots a cop, he'll make his bones. And he just was looking for a cop. And if Steiner had stopped to use the head instead of walking out, he would have rolled another 2 blocks and saw me. Yeah, and I'm standing there writing a ticket, head up ass into your citation book. I would have gotten smoked. And it's just that was just absolutely, man, that was crazy. And that's the moment that you realize that this is not a joke out here. These people will kill you. You know what I mean?
For nothing.
Yeah. And I remember talking to my old FTO about it. He kind of became my mentor throughout my career. And I just was telling him, man, that just shook me up. And he goes, just remember, man, your life comes down to a left or right turn on mission. When you're bumping out of the parking lot of the police station parking lot, you bump out onto mission. It's a T intersection. You got to choose to make a left turn or a right turn. That is how this career is. because you never know when you make that left turn and you're going to walk into something, or that right turn, you're going to turn and there's going to be a bad guy right there. And you have no idea. You're not dispatched to this call. You just roll up on it. Those were big, big, big moments to me. And then anytime you go to a officer funeral, it's just, man, it is the lowest of lows, and it just rips your heart out. And
I've been to a couple of police funerals that I didn't even know the people, and mm-hmm. I just can't help it. I mean, you get tears running down your cheeks because it's a brother officer, sister officer. It's, mm-hmm. it just, when we were in Columbia, and I was only there for 3 years, but we went to one funeral that 8 of our colleagues had been killed in one operation. And there's so many police officers in Columbia killed that the police have their own national funeral home. And you go in there and there's probably 6 or 8 different viewing rooms.
Wow.
It's just horrific. I tell you, they did have a little bit of a different attitude about it, because they're during the viewing and the funeral, there's a lot of gnashing of teeth and crying and moaning and groaning and just sadness. And then my partner and I went to the viewing that night, and there was a sergeant there, and we said, "Hey, I just want to go get something to eat and just sit around and talk with each other." And we got over to this little restaurant, and we ordered burgers and beers, and we're sitting there, and I looked at the sergeant and I said, "Hey, very sorry for what happened to all these guys. It should not have happened." And he looked at me, and there's a saying in Colombia, it's que pena. It means like big deal. It's over. We're moving on. And the sadness was gone and life is continuing. And we're not like that. We mourn sometimes for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yeah. Some of these are hard to get over.
Well, that's the thing. In some of these third world countries, life doesn't have the same meaning to them that it does to you and I, because right. life is so tragic and cruel to them. And you know, it's just like being a cop in Tijuana. I mean, what's your survival rate of that job?
One of the most dangerous places you could go anywhere in Mexico, it seems like.
Yeah.
Well, this is, thank you for sharing these stories, but this has gone kind of dark. So what I want to do.
I'm sorry, man.
No. This is why I wanted to have you back on the third episode. It's just things that people need to hear, especially guys guys and gals. I'm sorry, I'm from the South. When I say guys, it's all inclusive. But if you're considering law enforcement or the military, you need to know this kind of stuff. And I mentioned the military also, because there's an extended member of our family who is currently in one of the military branches. It might be over in a hot spot of the world that is on a ship, and their ship was fired at. Mm. No direct fire on that person, but he's realizing that, what am I doing here? The reality, I guess it never occurred to that person that you might get shot at.
Yeah.
So anyway.
You're exactly right.
This is, hopefully you folks are taking some benefit from this, but we're going to switch over to the rapid fire here, just light things up a little bit. So Chad, these are designed to be one word answers or a couple words. And let's just have a little fun. Some of them are a little bit serious though. So first one, coffee or energy drinks?
It depends on who's in the room. If my wife's here, no energy drinks. She gets all mad. But I'm a white monster guy. I have been since I was on patrol. Always white monster. That's my drink.
All right. Patrol or SWAT?
Patrol. Patrol, 100%. SWAT is something like I have in Badge Under Fire. I mean, that was some of the best times of my life in there. But patrol was my true first love. And it will always be my first love. When I think of my career, and I served in several different capacities, right? All the way to the, background investigations and stuff like that. Patrol is, that's it. And it's funny because you do nothing but complain on patrol. Yeah. You complain because you get treated like trash. You are the stepchild of the department because all these special details get all the neat stuff, all the neat tools and everything like that. But good old patrol, you do more with less. You're always understaffed. You're always getting forced over. But what I talk about in the book is the camaraderie that you have at the patrol level. Absolutely. You know, you go to a call and it's a crazy call, foot pursuit, whatever, man with a gun or shooting or whatever, big fight call down at the glass house or something. And you come out of that call, everybody's in cussing. After that, you kind of all meet up and debrief. You pass around a skull tin and you just sit there for 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes, you don't realize what that 5 minutes is to you until you retire. Because as you know, when you retire, it gets really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
very quiet. And you miss that dopamine with your partners busting each other's balls, just constantly. You're like rabid pit bulls making fun of each other all the time. But that's our humor. And it didn't matter black, white, Hispanic, Asian. We had all different races as cops in our city. And we all just got along, man. It was just so much fun. And
it is.
Yeah. It was good times. Sorry for the one word answer. Sorry.
No. That's good. Day shift or graveyard shift?
Oh, it depends on how old you are. Early on, graveyards. Graves was where it was at. There was five cops in a 26 square mile city of 165,000 people. There's five of us, 10-8 in the city. And it was you against the world. And it was another story here that just that it's like a Saturday night. There was like a boxing match, like on TV, some big Oscar De La Hoya match or something like that. So in our city, anytime there's any type of boxing match, it's on, dude. It is going to be a rocking night. There's going to be pages of calls pending. Okay. Just because the working class Hispanic nature of our city and that demographic loves boxing, especially if it's Oscar De La Hoya or whoever it was that was fighting. But just that night, just call to call to call. It's probably 2 a.m. It's 85 degrees outside still. Your vest is stuck to you. You get this grime over your body. You've been eating like crap all day because you haven't had code 7. You've been just pushing call to call to call because you don't go home until that screen is clear. And that's, you bitch about it at the time, but man, you just, if I could go back in time and just drop myself in there that night and just really appreciate what we had. Cause, and I say that in the Badge Under Fire, I say it's just, it's not who you work for, it's who you work with, you know, and getting, when I had my retirement thing, it was very small and it was only for a certain group of people. I didn't have the big bash with 150 people there. I had probably 20 or 30 people there. And they were people that I respected and that I enjoyed their presence and their company. And I remember one of the officers comes up and he gave me the greatest compliment that I ever had hoped to get. It was an unsolicited comment and praise where he said, "Chad, you know what? You are always there, dude. And you are always putting in the work. And you are always somebody that I could come and talk to. And your love for the job kept me going at times when I did not want to do this job."
Excellent. That's awesome. Great.
Yeah. And then even after publishing my book, I got a plethora. I mean, I got dozens and dozens of emails, direct messages, and stuff like that from retired cops that I thought when I was there and I was a brand new cop, I thought you hated me. Because back in the day, it was ribbing was tough and they didn't give a crap. I remember rolling up on one of the veteran cops. He was off on a traffic stop and I just was being a nice guy and I rolled up just to back him. He's on a stop. Harold Murphy was his name. And salt of salt. When you think of salty street cop, this was, they have his picture in the Webster's dictionary. So I roll up on him. I'm just going to back him. Just trying to make nice. And he's writing like his FI card and he looks over at me and he goes, "Did I call you?" "No, sir." "All right, get out of here." But that's literally what he said to me. And he was just that guy though. He's just salty dude, carried like a 38 behind his mag pouch right here. And just a good guy, but absolutely relentlessly will bust you and bust you and bust you.
Yeah.
And you think, "God, does that guy hate me?" And they're like, "No. If he hated you, he wouldn't talk to you."
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So anyway, I ended up running into him long after he had retired up at a shoe store up in Victorville. And he'd give me a big hug. And I was like, "Oh man, can somebody take a picture of this? Can I get the video from the store?" But anyway, I think he passed away a while back. But that's the other half of this that it's truly sad is all your giants that you came into your department with. Remember, you worked with giants back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at cops now and I don't see giants anymore. Like these guys were dudes that you looked so up to. And it's like, man, if I could just be like that guy. And then you're working in and you're in 20 years in, you're now that guy that people like, I got a couple of DMs from some of my trainees that I had, like long old messages. They're like, "Sir, I just want to let you know that you made a difference in my life, and your love and your attitude, your positive attitude all the time. I loved it. I try and do that every day now."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway, another long answer, Steve. You got to quit asking me these questions.
All right. This one is one word.
Okay.
Describing the FBI.
Can I use two words? Ambition and incompetence.
Okay. Well, here's a good one then. One or two words describing your wife.
Rock solid.
Excellent. That's our unsung heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like my dedication page in the book, that's the first thing you read. If it wasn't for her, I would not be sitting here talking to you today. That is an absolute fact.
What was your favorite meal after a shift?
In and out, man. In and out, double animal style, no onions, and a Diet Coke extra ice. That was also some of the best memories that you have is when it's the middle of the night. You don't have time to take a code 7. You don't have time to take a lunch break. But you're like staying on a call a little extra. You roll through, grab a burger, and you're eating on the hood of your car, or you're eating on the trunk of your car like this, and you're listening to the radio, and then something pops off, like, damn it. You throw your burger down in the trash, and then you roll again. Complaining and so mad about that. But now you look back at that, and it just brings a smile to your face.
Well, and that's just a sign of the dedication of the men and women in law enforcement.
Oh, absolutely. And unsung, unappreciated, but you don't sign up for this job looking for accolades. Mm-hmm. You don't sign up for it for somebody to come in and go, "Hey, I really appreciate the work you did. You made a difference in my life." You don't sign up for that. I signed up because I truly wanted to be a crime fighter. I wanted to take people to jail, and I wanted to right some wrongs out in the society. And that's what I loved about it. And like my chapter on Chips, right? I saw Chips when I was a kid, and I loved, you know, Eric Estrada and John Wilcox, Ponch and John. I loved that show. And that's why I was a motor cop for 8 years.
Yeah. All right. How about your favorite Bible verse?
Ooh, yeah, definitely. Here am I. Send me. Right? Whom shall I send? You know, and it just gives you goose pimples, man. You know, you just a man has no greater love than to lay down his life for his friends. And when you're in that job and you're immersed in it, you don't think about paying that ultimate price every day. That doesn't really enter your mind. Now, do you get scared on calls? Do you get, you know, sometimes, ooh, man, that really got me on that one. Yeah, you do, but you process it, compartmentalize it, and you put it away, and you go to the next call.
Yeah. And I got goosebumps when you said that one, too. That's the Bible verse I put in our book. Mm. It's no greater love. So what's next for Chad Jensen here?
When I retired, thankfully, I was able to get out of California and come to the great state of Texas. So we ended up landing out here in North Texas, about 2 hours west of Dallas. So I live on acreage out here, got a horse barn, shop, boat on the lake. I'm retired. Your California PERS pension goes pretty far in Texas, which is nice. So right now I published the book, right? Badge Under Fire, that got published. So I've been on several podcasts, done a lot of stuff. Right now, we're working on a website, badgeunderfire.com. And that is, that's currently the project I'm working on right now. I did my own audiobook, if you can believe that.
That was great.
Yeah. That was a scary prospect, because I don't know if you've ever heard yourself talk, right? And you're like, man, I sound horrible, dude. Who would want to listen to my voice? But anyway, it released it. People really loved it, and I got a lot of good reviews. My book has gotten excellent reviews. So it's just a matter of getting this out there. There's some podcasting, a YouTube channel I'm trying to get up and get going. And because there's just so much content out there for us, and there's so much that nobody talks about, whether it's the administrative portion of this whole job and how that's, there's just, innumerable amount of people that have
faced things similar to what I faced in this career that never get talked about. So, I mean, again, this is, I could talk for 6 hours, but, you know, so, but yeah.
The interest is there too. That's why Game of Crimes, we're in our sixth year here.
Wow.
And no shortage of guests. It's, I love the dedicated listeners as well as the law enforcement, some I don't even know, that recommend people now. Like Patrick O'Donnell recommending you. I mean, this has been a great interview. So we're getting close to the end here. If you had 5 minutes alone with every rookie police officer, what would you tell them?
Wow. are you in this for the right reason? Number one, you got to be honest with yourself, because there's a lot of cops that you've seen come and go, right? Are you in it for the right reason? Number one, is it a calling to you? Because if you're just doing this for a paycheck, you're not going to last. It has to be in your heart and in your soul that it just, this is what I love, because you're going to take a beating on it. Number one. Number two, our senior senior TAC instructor at Real Hondo Academy, class 140, shout out. I cannot recall his name right now, but when you're graduating the academy and your TAC instructors will come in to be human for 30 seconds, right? They'll come in and just talk to you, and they're going to give you my advice for your career moving forward, right? I remember he came in and he was a leathery old Vietnam vet age style, just hard. And he comes in and he goes, my advice to all of you guys is do not make all of your friends cops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a huge, and when I went through what I went through on admin leave during all this federal stuff, again, I hate to shop my book, but there's a whole chapter or a whole section of my book about how I dealt with the depression. Because when you're on admin leave, it's depressing. You're on an island. Nobody talks to you. And thankfully, I had a handful of friends, including a fireman friend that I talked to, that kept my brain square, because your brain is your own worst enemy, especially as a cop that has a high drive. You will do nothing but eat yourself from the inside out. So don't make all your friends cops. And then I guess the other is just watch your back. Nobody is your friend out here. You've got to watch your back. You think you're walking into the easiest of easy situations, you never know what you're going to run into, and don't let anybody ever get the drop on you. Because I have three sons that are cops right now. Three of my four sons are cops.
Wow.
And it's just thankfully, two of them are in admin positions. One does backgrounds for the Sheriff's Department, San Bernardino, and the other is a sergeant for Pomona PD, believe it or not. And then my other son, he's a deputy, street deputy out in Kootenai County, which is up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the only one that scares me, because I never really understood the amount of separatist style people there are up in Idaho that are scary, that are like anti-law enforcement, anti-government. That scares me. Yeah. You know, gangsters rolling around on the south side of Pomona. I'm concerned with them, but they don't scare me. Those people scare me.
Okay. Last question for you. If you had it all to do all over again, would you be a police officer again?
Absolutely. 100, 1000%. Yes. What happened to me? It was an anomaly. This isn't the average career that a police officer faces. And I had wonderful times. I worked with some of the greatest people I've ever known, worked with some of the worst people I've ever known. But overall, the job brought me absolute joy, especially time working with kids, because as an 8-year motor cop, my soul was hurting, because when all you're doing is writing tickets and impounding cars from the working man, it wears you down. Okay. And then I needed to get out of that, got back to patrol. Then I ended up working out in backgrounds and bringing that Cops for Kids program and mentoring that program, just really especially at the end of my career, it really brought me full circle, and you leave a legacy. And that's what you kind of want to do. And you want to be thought of as hard worker and a solid guy.
or solid gal. You know, that term is not held lightly in law enforcement. To be solid, it doesn't mean you're crooked. It doesn't mean you cover up for people. It means you're freaking solid. And that's all I care. So, but yeah, do it again in a minute.
I knew the answer to that before I even asked it. I right. feel the same way.
Yeah.
So, brother, thank you so much for everything, for your service to your country, to your community, as well as your country, your patriotism, for being a hero out there. And I'm sure you won't agree that you're a hero, but you are. That's what I say here on Game of Crimes is that's part of what makes a hero a hero, is they don't admit that that's what they are. And thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming back.
My pleasure. Absolutely. I'd love to come back anytime you need to kill time. You run out of guests, you call Chad.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to find out more about Chad Jensen, go to his website. It's badgeunderfire.com. I'm looking at the website now, and it is fantastic. I know you said you're working on it, but man, this is one of the best websites I've ever seen. It seriously is the way the background, as you scroll through it, the background is moving, and I've just never seen one like that. Yeah. Because I'm not a real technical kind of guy.
Me neither.
You can find Chad on Instagram at @badgeunderfire, fight for truth, and also at cjensenx6. Okay, that's @badgeunderfire, fight for truth, and you also cjensen, JENSENX6. And on Facebook, you can find him at Chad Jensen. And also Badge Under Fire, A Fight for Truth. His book is called Badge Under Fire, A Fight for Truth. I got it on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon, Goodreads, Barnes & Noble, Ballast Books, Walmart, eBay, and I'm sure there's quite a few others out there that just ran out of space here.
Exactly.
Seriously, if you're listening, or if you're thinking about joining the law enforcement community, read this book. I recommend every book that comes on here, but this one will give you so much insight into what can potentially happen out there, even when you have the best intentions and you follow the letter of the law. Things can still go sideways, especially nowadays. It's worse now than when Chad and I were out there and carrying a gun and carrying a badge. Military, same for you guys. Most of you know that it's going to be dangerous when you join the military. We might not be at war when you join, but it can always happen. And we are right now. We're at war. Thank you so much for coming back every week. I couldn't do this without you folks coming to support the game of crimes here. If you haven't seen us on YouTube, do me a favor, type in Game of Crimes podcast in the search bar, click on the subscribe button, watch some of the episodes, see what Chad, how good he looks and how bad I look. Click on a like on some of the episodes that you like and send me some of your comments. If you haven't heard, we have a Patreon channel, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. You can get early access to next week's interviews, and you get them with no music, limited editing, and no ads, okay? So that's part of what you get over there. Plus, I've got a lot of other stuff that I throw out there. I'm a little behind right now, so you folks on Patreon, thank you for your support. Love you guys. All right, let's finish this up. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. I know why you come back every week. Same reason I come back every week, because we enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all. And that's our game of crimes. God bless you all. See you next week.
This is Amy Brown from Feeling Things with Amy and Kat. Back to school season always feels like a fresh start, not just for kids, but for all of us. It's a great reminder to create new routines and find meaningful ways to connect with our family, friends, and community. Hasbro Games make it easy to gather around the table, put the screens away, share some laughs, and create joyful memories together. Whether it's Monopoly, Connect Four, Guess Who, or another family favorite, there's something for everyone. You can find these and other Hasbro favorites at your local Walmart, walmart.com, or simply tap the link in today's show notes to bring more play into your week.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Bretsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.